Hello, everybody. It's great to be here one more time today. And my name is Gary Fowler, and I'm the CEO, president, founder of GSD, Get You Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with two unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team of Clutch Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion. And also Eva.ai, an AIHR tech company that I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. Today, GSD is located in 57 countries, and we have 143 companies inside of GSD. With that, I'd like to introduce my incredible guest. So my incredible guest, Brian Kolb, is the VP of Strategy at Airblox. And at Airblox, which is an innovative technology platform that integrates the financial markets with the air freight industry by offering businesses ways to mitigate risk through a more efficient procurement process and unique funding solution. He received his MBA from University of Chicago Booth School and his undergraduate degree from Wheaton. Before Airblox, Brian spent 10 years at United Cargo, so he knows a little about freight and shipping. And eventually led the pricing, revenue, and management group for the Americas region. So with that, I'd like to bring Brian on board. Hey, Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Gary.
So we were just talking before the show. You're from San Diego, right? And you moved to Chicago, but why did you do that?
About this time of year, I ask myself all the time, right? I actually came out for school. I went to Wheaton College, played baseball out there. So I was part of the lure. And to keep the story short, I met a girl and got a job, and the rest is history. I'm out here for a while, right?
I remember going out there, and it was a winter time. And I was coming from Florida, and it was pretty cold. I mean, they call it the Windy City for a reason. And it was pretty cold, but the people were real nice. I got to tell you, there's a Greek town there that was incredible, like amazing Greek food. And then the Chicago pizza was unbelievable. Well, I will say this. I came back in the summertime, and the summertime was incredible, right? It didn't even seem like the same city, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, it's so true. We live for the summertime, but it is a great city. I mean, I think that's what keeps everybody here. It's a great city. Love our sports, love our food. Architecture is amazing, but the city itself is awesome. Weather, room for improvement, but the summers are where it's at for sure.
So what do you do for fun? I mean, what do you do when it's cold like that for fun? I know you said it was like 42 degrees today. Yeah. That's a big deal. But what do people do for fun?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this type of weather, we're outside, right? We take every opportunity we can get. But during the summer or during the winter, I think it's, everybody loves their football, love the Bears. I think that's a big lure. I got the Bulls, the Blackhawks. So I'm a big sports guy. I love getting together with the buddies and watching the game. We go to a lot of sporting events as a family, which is great. And but a little more indoor activities for sure during the winter. But I guess you get used to it a little bit, as much as you can. So we're still trying to get outside, do some of the sledding, some of the snow stuff. But yeah,
that's interesting. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your journey. You went to Wheaton. You went to the booth at the University of Chicago. So as you've gone down through this journey, how did you get into freight anyhow? Does that like one day wake up and say, I think I'm going to get into freight. I'm from San Diego, and we had a lot of ships coming in and out, and I'm going to get into freight. How did that happen?
Yeah, I wish it was that simple where I just thought, oh, man, let me get into this thing. But yeah, I was actually playing baseball after school. I played some independent minor league baseball and was looking for a job after that adventure ended, and was kind of looking at a few different, didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but looking at a few different companies. And one of them was United Airlines, and stumbled upon an opening in the cargo division, and really didn't know much about cargo. Didn't really know that it was on the passenger planes. I mean, I knew about, you know, ocean freight. I've seen the big ocean freighters, ocean vessels. I've seen, you know, the big 747 freighters flying around. So I had a general idea, but I really didn't know how much was on the passenger side. So I applied for the job, got the job, did kind of a crash course, and man, I pretty quickly fell in love with it. And I think it's one of those things, I think we hear it all the time. Once you are in freight, you know, supply chain, you kind of get stuck in it. And I would definitely say that's how it feels, but not in a negative way, right? I really did fall in love with it. And I had some other opportunities along my career to kind of venture outside of it, but I just never really could make the switch. Really enjoy the supply chain, really enjoy air freight specifically. I just think that that's a very quick part of the supply chain and a very integral part of the supply chain. And you get to move a lot of really fascinating things and be part of a lot of really cool projects. And then now with my new venture at Airblox, it's been really cool to see how we can bring some new technology to air freight and see how we can and hopefully change the game in that part.
Well, you know, what percentage of, so, you know, standard commercial planes, what percentage of the cargo they have is commercial cargo in those planes?
So I think I can speak a little bit for kind of my old role at United, but we would say that most of our kind of wide body freight, about two thirds of that plane, the belly of it was for cargo, right? So about a third of it.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So it's a lot more than people would think. And then we were a big partner of the USPS. So, you know, a portion of that goes to the mail. And then it's really up to our sales team to bring on, you know, some freight and sell that, and then our operations team to move it. And it really does become a big puzzle piece as you start trying to move things through the network. And it can be really exciting trying to figure out how you maximize, you know, some maybe lower demand O&D pairs. How can you use those flights with some trucking and some connectivity to actually relieve some pressure off of the high demand flight? So it's a really fascinating way how you can use a scheduled service, scheduled network, and really balance out the freight that way.
That's interesting. So what's the most unusual freight that you've seen carried on a plane that's legal?
Yeah, I was gonna say legal. So, I mean, I think some of the, probably the most unusual is we've done some what we call like zoo or aquarium moves where there's some large animals. I think I have a video that we moved a hammerhead shark from Hawaii to San Francisco. And that was in the belly of a plane, which was pretty cool. And then
the reason for moving a hammerhead shark,
it was an aquarium move. I think they were going from an aquarium to actually the Monterey. I believe it was going to the Monterey.
Okay, I was gonna say, because if somebody was that wealthy, yeah, they'd have a hammerhead shark in that was like a James Bond movie, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But no, and then I think some of the cool parts projects we've been a part of are you know, some of the pharma or medicinal moves. Obviously, we're part of the COVID vaccine movement. But then I think there's a lot of new like cancer treatments and plasma treatments that are very specific to individuals where, you know, you have a very short period of time, transplants, things like that. And those are always special because you get to hear the story at the end of it, right? That
wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. You know, you don't think about it. And yeah, you don't think about it. There's so many things that are moved. You know, what percentage of the time do they get nefarious stuff on planes? What do you think? It's like, there's like, you know, you always hear these stories. Is it like that? Is it that pronounced or not?
I don't think it's that pronounced. I think, there is a very strict TSA process and a very kind of strict operational process to make sure that you don't have a lot of, you know, kind of contraband or anything like that flying through the system. I mean, it does happen, right? And I think one of the biggest things that happens is a lot of undeclared things, right? I think that's where you get into the biggest.
I know when you're at the airport, you always see like they've got elephant tusks and you know, those kind of things. You know, animals. I saw somebody had a freaking parrots in their super from Latin America. I'm like, you got guts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, we've seen some strange things. I've gotten calls, you know, from our call center when I was at United, you know, can we take this, right? Can we take that?
And somebody had like a python in their bag.
Yeah. I mean, we had somebody ask about different types of animals, but we also had someone ask about like shark fins and things. It's like, well, you don't want to be part of that, right? And then you also have with the conflicts going on, you get a lot of requests. So whether it's the Middle East or Ukraine, Russia, we get a lot of requests for sending, you know, military stuff over there. And so, yeah, you definitely get a widespread amount of requests. The big one that we were always dealing with a lot was, you know, medicinal marijuana, right? That was becoming a little bit more prevalent. And as things were getting legalized, where do you fall in? You can't obviously ship it cross state. And so it was becoming a bigger issue on that end and all that. But yeah, it's amazing how the operations teams, the TSA guidelines are constantly adjusting. And there's always something for sure.
Well, so tell me about, so how did you come up with AirBlocks? What was the genesis of that? What was that all about?
Yeah. So our founder, Adeep, and our co-founder, Adeep and Sanj. Specifically Adeep, who's kind of heading our team at the moment. He's got a financial background and really into kind of risk management. And he was, from his background, he invested into a ground handling company that was failing and kind of helped turn that around. And during that time, he had a lot of exposure to airlines and forwarders and how they were doing and conducting business. And he thought there's the better way to do this, right? There is a different way to create some transparency, connect these two in the way that they do business, but also help create a tool that can help them manage risk a little bit better. You know, he lived through the COVID time and seeing these big swings in capacity and rates and thought, well, we could do this a little bit better. So they kicked it off the ground. And then shortly after one of the presentations where I was on the other side of the table, I had the opportunity to join them. And so I've been part of the team now for a little over a year, and it's been a really, really great experience. And it's been interesting, right? I went from one of the players in the supply chain to now one of the guys that's trying to help create some efficiencies and bring in some new opportunity.
And how is it being on the other side?
It's different. I think it's been a really great experience. I think I think one of the benefits of being a player is you really get to understand what it's like to be on that side, right? And I was, you know, there's always room to grow and learn, but I knew quite a bit of what it was like to be on the carrier side, right? And I knew very much how the rates were and my area of expertise. But, you know, when I was able to take a step back and be more of this neutral party in the supply chain, I really gotten to learn quite a bit. I learned a lot about the forwarder side of things, learned a lot about some of the inefficiencies, some of the ways we were doing things that we thought we were doing them, you know, perfectly. You realize, wow, there are some holes in that, right? And getting to study some of the other airlines and other carriers and seeing how they're doing things, it just opens your eyes to a little bit more what's out there. And so it's been a really great learning experience, but it's also been really cool because, again, instead of being on kind of one side, in a way we're part of everybody's team, right? We're there to help everybody grow. And so that's exciting on a separate front.
And how do you, you know, going from a large carrier to a startup, how does it feel?
It feels like going from like a cruise ship to like a jet ski, as far as how fast we're able to kind of turn and move. But it's great. I think, you know, on the practical side of things, I think what was interesting about United is we knew what we were, right? We kind of knew what we were doing. We had a very specific spot in the supply chain, right? And within that, you had some ability to move, but it was wasn't a 90 degree turn, right? It was a very slow kind of process to do that. But I think what's been really cool about Airblox is as we are growing and finding our place in the market, we're really able to quickly make some adjustments. And we've got a really, really great team from the technology side, as well as the business side. But the technology side, where if we need to make some adjustments, customize some things for the customer, we're really able to do that in a really quick amount of time. And that's a great feeling to be able to quickly move and make adjustments. And in a world that, prides itself on speed, it's fun to be part of that side of it as well.
And then what kind of revenue do you have today? How big is the company?
Yeah, so we're growing. We just started revenue less than a year ago. And so we are, quickly approaching. I think we've grown every month, quickly approaching, the seven-figure mark is as far as what we're accomplishing total. And so it's been good. It's definitely, I think we started with just a couple customers. And I think that was nice for us to learn and see how we could kind of benefit those customers. And I think what's cool about that is each one of those has really grown. So our value prop of growing revenue for each of these customers has been really good. And we've been able to prove that fact. And then we've just continued to grow as a company and actually had, I think, our best month ever in January, which is typically a slower month for the air freight world.
So when you've gone into this, you've got a family, came into this thing. Was it a tough decision to go from a really rock solid job to something that's got a lot of unknowns? How long did it take to make that decision and what made you make the decision?
Yeah. I would first say that I have a great and supportive wife who I think we definitely understood the risks that we were taking. But I think she was also, very supportive of this idea that we had talked through, which is, I could have retired, at a large company. And I think there's some stability there, but there's also an opportunity to try something new. And I felt like I was at the point in my career where I had done some really good things at United and had the opportunity to some would say take a risk, but I would say try a new adventure, right? And kind of switch over to something very different. And I'd always wondered what it would be like to work at a startup. I also was curious to know what it would be like to transfer some of those skills that I had learned at a larger company and be able to implement that into a startup environment. And I think what was really cool too is being able to kind of create the culture and the structure and some of those things that we, you have the ability to create yourself. And, you can sit there at a big company and say, well, I would have done things this way or that way, and maybe not had the opportunity to really go out there and say, actually, I'm going to try it this way and that way and see what worked. And that's also been really great. So not just from like the business side, but also from a leadership side, I think it's been a good experience as well. Been able to fine tune some of those skills and then had a lot of fun too. I think, there's definitely a lot of long days, a lot of maybe frustrating moments. But throughout this process, it is a really fun thing. And you would probably know better than me, but it's a really fun thing to build something and watch it grow. And hopefully I'm sitting in your shoes one day with a couple unicorns.
Yeah, you go down through it. The thing is, you got to want to have, you get to a point where you enjoy having the risk. You enjoy going down through and conquering. You see how you change the world. You take a little company and like Click Software is a little tiny company from Israel. And now it's a part of Salesforce. And you start to look at it and say, I remember naming the company, coming up with a family of products, doing an IPO on NASDAQ. You go down through the journey and you can't, it's interesting because it's like, it's a testament to the kind of things you've done because now, everybody's like, oh, Click Software, the people know who it is or Eva, they know the company. And it's kind of interesting to, because you remember when it was a little tiny company and, you named it Click Software. right? And it's interesting. So as you're going down through the journey, what's going to be next after this, Brian? Are you going to stay here the rest of your life? Are you going to, what's, how's your trajectory now? What do you want to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, obviously we're still got a lot of work to do with AirBlocks. I think we've done a lot of really good things over the past year that I've been here, but still a lot of work to do. It's hard for me to think much further down the line than, even, you know, next week's and, you know, next month's, events. But yeah, I think obviously I would love to see this thing through and hopefully we'll have a really good, exit, whether that's through, a sale or, from an acquisition and some sort. But again, from our end, I see myself here for the next few years, as long as we can continue to build this thing. And then hopefully I've enjoyed this side of business. I've enjoyed being in the startup side of it. And hopefully I'll, like I said, be able to start something else. And whether that's myself as a founder or, again, being in an early phase of a startup, I think that's kind of where I see some movement on that as well.
No, that's great. And so what advice would you give to other people like yourself that are working for large corporations, and they're afraid to take the risk and they're afraid to step out because they have a, wife or a husband that's not risk prone, doesn't want to do it, and averse? What would you say to them out there? So they're sitting in their office right now, they're listening to this or in their car drive and listen to the podcast. What would you say to them?
Yeah. I think I'd probably first say, you gotta do what's right for your family. Not every, I think from my end, like I said, I have a very lucky, very supportive wife. It wasn't like one conversation and then we made the decision, but I think, that's obviously an important aspect of it. But I really think that, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, but you don't know what's on the other side until you take a chance. Right. And I think one of the things that helped push me a little bit is that I felt like there was always going to be an opportunity at a larger company. Right. And maybe it's not, United, but maybe I would have had some different opportunities throughout the journey at a larger corporation. But I really wanted to understand and see what it was like. And I think there's, you can learn so much in the startup environment. I mean, 100-fold maybe in certain weeks and months than what you learn through a year. And that's no disrespect to the larger corporations, but I think how quickly things are moving and how you're wearing so many different hats at the same time and all that. And I think being able to transfer that back to, if I were, let's say AirBlocks, doesn't work out or we exit and I'm still in need of another job, I feel like I've learned so much. It would be really easy to head back into, the larger corporate roles and say, okay, this is all this great experience that I'm able to take and the story I'm able to tell to be able to find something back in there. But I think for me, for a long time, I wanted to do this. I just didn't really know how to take that leap and finally had the push and felt like I found the right opportunity. And sometimes you take a risk and it doesn't work out. But I think, like I said, there's always learning, always some really good experiences along the way. And I think there's just enough opportunities out there that you'll be able to find a home back at a large organization if you need to.
Yeah, I mean, there's always opportunities, but if you never, you're like, one of the things you said, you don't know if you don't, because you haven't done it. And
yeah,
so you're out there doing it and you're not afraid to take the risk and to do things, there's incredible opportunity. I mean, every one of the entrepreneurs I've talked to, you never know what's going to happen, but you can take any company and pivot to success if you have the capital, you've got the network and contacts, and you've got the operational expertise. So having their founder that's already done it really helps out. And in your own background, it's never easy, but if it was easy, everybody do it. There's a reason why what 1% of the population is 99% of the wealth. You got to be willing to take the risk. It's not easy. And sometimes it's counterintuitive. And if you do it, you go out and do it. And I can tell you my first startup, I had $100,000 out at about 22, 23 years old. And for that was a lot of money at that time on credit cards.
Yeah.
And we did it and it was successful. And I went down through and I said, well, this is kind of fun. You know what I mean? You're creating something nobody else has done before and people really liked it. And I thought, wow, this is fun. But it's never that easy. And, you know, some people say it's luck, Brian. I'm not sure it's luck. It's like putting yourself in the right place at the right time, you know, being around the right kind of people, finding people that can help you and support the dream is important. And then, you know, on yourself, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You really manifest, you become what people say you are, you want to be, right? You can actually manifest it and things happen. You know, as a clinical psychologist, you know, the self-fulfilling prophecy is important. Believing in what you believe and focusing in that direction. Stay positive. It's not about, as Mother Teresa said, stopping war. It's about pro-peace. How can we go out and make that dent? So listen, we're coming up to the top of the show. Closing thoughts, and what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn for sure. I think that's easiest. I'm happy to share some more contact information through that. And hey, Gary, I don't know if you have you know, a different way we can post some of that stuff on your thing, but happy to do that as well. Yeah, and I think that the closing thoughts that I'd have is I think it's really I think taking a chance and doing, you know, pursuing something that interests you is it's going to be a more fulfilling thing, right? And I think even when it comes to your work life, right? I mean, working something that's challenging, a lot of hours, that's a long days, but you're enjoying that journey, can be a really rewarding thing. And I think there's opportunity to jump on board, and would love to share more of my experience through that process and my thought process as well. Gary, I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it too. This is our 904th, I just heard today, our 904th podcast that we've done. And so for each of you out there, thanks for really supporting us and being there. It's good to, you can reach us on Google Play, Apple in the store as a podcast. We're all over the place, Anchor FM. So please check us out. Also, make sure you like and comment, and we're here to help. We're here to make this world a little bit better place. So each of you out there, stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And we'll be back to you again soon with another exciting edition. Thanks, Brian, and thanks, everybody. We appreciate it.
Thank you.